Can I introduce BCA's President, Vaughan Bennison?
Thanks, John, and I'm sure that someone with perfect pitch could tell me exactly what that note of feedback was then. It gives me great pleasure today to be here as the President of Blind Citizens Australia, and it's a very proud moment for me to be attending this convention and to be a significant part of it. Before we go any further, though, it also gives me great pleasure to announce our keynote speaker who will open the convention, Her Excellency Professor Margaret Gardner, the Governor of Victoria.
Thank you, Vaughan. And could I acknowledge particularly Vaughan Bennison, President, Deb Deshaies, Chief Executive Officer, members of the board and members generally of Blind Citizens Australia. I would also like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which this building stands, the Wurundjeri people of the Eastern Kulin Nation, and pay my respects to their elders past and present. Now, I know this is a special convention because today's convention acknowledges the 50th anniversary of Blind Citizens Australia, but you'll forgive me, I hope, if we just go a little further back and into Victoria's history, recognising that not everybody in the room here is from Victoria and that there are people who are listening and streaming in who are also from many other places. But this is just a little story about early Victoria and a reminder for people who are not from here that Victoria didn't become a colony, the state that we are now, till 1850. So not too long after that, in 1881, Thomas James arrived at the door of a family home in Carisbrook, Victoria. He had lost his eyesight in a mining accident some years earlier. He'd learnt to read Braille, and he'd made it his vocation to teach others to do the same. He was known at the time as the blind teacher, and he travelled right across Victoria, accompanied by his dog with the not terribly original name of Fido. And he offered his services and books in Braille for free. On this particular occasion, he was invited to stay the night, and he was tutoring the youngest daughter of the family whose home he stopped at, as he had done so many other times. When he departed the next day, he left with what he felt was a real sense of hope and opportunity, because he had left her with all the opportunity to access a world that was not available to her unless she had the opportunity for education, which he was actually providing. That girl, and I think this name is probably familiar to many people in this room, that girl was Tilly Aston. She went on to become the first blind person in Australia to attend university, and she was the founder of Australia's first Braille library. That chance meeting in Carisbrook, Victoria, with Thomas James changed the trajectory of her life. And it was the life that she spent breaking down barriers for others as well as herself and proving people wrong. In her memoirs, she said, "I never admitted an inferiority complex." And we have to remember that in the times we are talking about in the late 19th century, the barriers to people who were blind or vision impaired, to many people with different sorts of disadvantages, including social and economic disadvantage, were significant. Access to opportunity and education was not very evenly spread. She said, "I never admitted an inferiority complex, save in one aspect, which was shown in the constant desire to excel despite the fact that she suffered from blindness. Since I knew that to overcome, I must use more of myself than a seeing person to attain equal power and status. She, of course, faced all the barriers, the prejudices of preconceived notions, which were particular at the time, and she felt constantly required to prove her worth. And I know that still resonates with many people today, but the point was she understood that she was actually deploying more of her capabilities than most people did, and that she was constantly striving to do more. But what it started with, which is something I think that's always important to remind ourselves, whatever the circumstances we find ourselves in, it was the opportunity to learn for herself what was possible. And that remains a great goal in the sort of advocacy that I think organisations like this fulfil. Yes, the barriers of the 19th century are not the ones that are experienced by everyone today, not that the world is perfect by any means, but the barriers are different. And indeed, technology has opened more possibilities for people in all sorts of ways. But it is the advocacy that says that members of Australia's blind and low vision community still need the advocacy to gain the access, to gain equal access with others to all the opportunities that should be available to everyone in this life. So we know significant progress has been made since the times of Thomas Jaynes and Tilly Aston, but the world has many places to go to be perfected. We are relatively fortunate in Australia, but there are many places in the world where the opportunities we find here are not easily available. So as it was true back then, achieving change relies on providing access to opportunity, and you don't get access to opportunity without people who are prepared to advocate for what's necessary and what some may deem to be impossible, because that's what advocacy does. It keeps pushing, just pushing at the limits and reminding other people what is needed and what is possible. So over the past 50 years, Blind Citizens Australia has performed that advocacy role, delivering the fights to remove or lower barriers, to provide greater opportunities and access. It champions accessibility in all the senses of the world, to education, to employment, to a life well lived, to a life that has all the possibilities that our world should afford us. Each boundary pushed has helped countless blind and low vision Australians and their families overcome social isolation, access economic opportunities, receive fair support services, live full and rewarding independent lives, and that is really important. And the thing, we're talking about Blind Citizens Australia, but we know, because we are in Australia relatively fortunate compared to many nations around the world, we provide also example, models, opportunities that others can take up around the world as well. So it isn't just our citizens that are benefited. It isn't just us. We are also providing assistance elsewhere. I want to thank all the members, the volunteers, the donors, on behalf of all Victorians. I'm here representing, but I think I can say that as an Australian, all Australians benefit greatly from what you do. And I'd like to acknowledge in particular contributions of your founding members, as well as your inaugural president. And I know I met members of the board who have really given decades of engagement to this organisation. The inaugural president, as you will all know, is still an active member 5 decades on from the founding of this advocacy body. There are many things that you know that have been achieved better than I, but the work that has been done and the work that continues, you might say, draws from that worldview that started way back in the 19th century with people like Thomas and Tilly, the idea that everybody is entitled to the opportunities for the full and independent and fulfilling life that, and no one should be underestimated in the pursuit of it. We should admire the determination of those pioneers and remember that advocacy takes a lot of determination. You've got to be patient if you're an advocate. You've got to be patient and not deterred by what will be thrown at you. And we rely on you, the advocates, to continue to strive for a world in which barriers don't prevent what we wish for everyone. Thank you for your work in this important mission, and congratulations on this significant milestone. It is a difficult thing to maintain an effective advocacy organisation over half a decade. And given you've done so well over half a decade, I'm sure the next half a decade will fly by very quickly. Congratulations.
Your Excellency, on behalf of the board and staff and all of the members of Blind Citizens Australia, I offer you my thanks for delivering the opening speech of the 2025 convention. Many of us, of course, know the story of Tilly Aston very well, but it's timely that we're reminded in this 50th anniversary of Blind Citizens Australia about her work and the work of other blind and vision impaired people who have made this world a better place and who continue to make this world a better place. We have an offering of thanks for you, but as I say once again, thanks so much on behalf of all of us for being a part of our convention and making this the memorable occasion that we know that it will be. One of the things that I'd like to do just quickly before I introduce our next speaker is to acknowledge the former leaders and the former contributors to Blind Citizens Australia, as well as the current leaders and contributors to Blind Citizens Australia, whose work we continue as we advocate for equality and equity and human rights of blind and vision impaired people, not only across Australia, but across the world. And that leads into our next comment. We're very privileged in BCA to have had a number of people associated with our organisation who have been presidents of the Blind Union. You've heard from them today. Today, though, I'd like to introduce to you our next speaker, who is the current president of the World Blind Union, Martin Abel Williamson. And I have a brief biography here, which I shall read for you. Martin resides in Auckland, New Zealand. She was born in Namibia, but grew up in South Africa after her single mum was told that there were no inclusive special education opportunities in Namibia. She attended the National School for the Blind in South Africa and acquired 2 degrees and 1 postgraduate diploma in psychology and education. She emigrated to New Zealand, where she continued tertiary studies in the fields of vision rehabilitation, management, and social policy. Martine was employed by Blind Low Vision New Zealand, the equivalent of Vision Australia, as a vision rehabilitation instructor, then moved on to local government to lobby on behalf of disabled persons. She is currently on the board of Blind Citizens New Zealand and became involved with the WBU in 2007. She's been the president of the WBU since 2021. In 2017, Martine was awarded the Queen's Service Medal for her work and involvement in the disability sector and community. She also serves on other boards and entities such as the International Association for the Prevention of Blindness, IAPB, and works for central government agencies such as the Ministry of Health and New Zealand Human Rights Commission. Please join me in welcoming Martine to come and speak to us. Martine, are you there?
Yep, right here.
Oh, yep. I'll move out of the way.
Kia ora everybody, from greetings from New Zealand. G'day. Thank you for inviting me to Australia. Did I say that right? You have to say Australia. First I want to say happy birthday to BCA. This year and last year has really been so full of birthdays. Last year, World Blind Union became 40. This year, of course, Blind Citizens New Zealand becomes 80. And 200 now, according to the British and many others, last year we celebrated 200 years of Braille. According to people in France, we celebrated this year. So what we do at WBU level is we're being typical politicians, we're keeping everybody happy, so we're celebrating Braille 200 for 2 years in a row. We talked a bit before about yesterday afternoon at the Executive Leadership Program, and the question was asked, how do people become leaders, or do we see ourselves as leaders? And I think most of us didn't grow up thinking, I'm going to be the chair of something or the president of something. I think we thought of much more other things to do that's more relaxing. And I think that's why it was so good to hear this morning the acknowledgement of our ancestors and family, because I think my mum was a single parent, and when I was born, and at the age of 6 months was diagnosed as being blind, and at that stage there wasn't much of a bedside manner, so she basically got told that there's no prognosis, and she should just seek government support, and there wasn't really in Namibia, and so she took us to South Africa, knowing that there's a special school for the blind there. And she always felt guilty about it, because my sister could stay at home and she had to send me away 2,000 kilometres to see four times a year. And when I finally grew up, I did say to her, for a single parent, how could she have struggled for inclusive education? And in the end, it's things we have to get over. Yes, it was probably institutionalised, but that is what I grew up with. That is part of my heritage, and that is part of who I am. Also, I remember never thinking of advocacy. My first memory of when someone said to me, what do you want to be when you grow up, is I said to my mum, I want to become a vet. I want to care for animals. And I was about 4 or 5. And I remember at the time, she just said, that's great. And I think maybe she just thought, what the... But she didn't say, and she was like that her whole life. I think she just thought, oh goodness, hopefully someone else gets sense into her head. So she never told me, you can't do this or you can't do that. And I was probably about 7 when I was home on school holiday, so she had to wake me up in the mornings to take me to work with her so that I can sit in a side office while she's at work. And I was complaining, said, it's holiday. Why should I get up early to go to work with you? And she says, now, once you're a vet and the farmer rings you at 3 a.m. to come and help deliver some animals, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm not going to become a vet. So she probably, thank goodness, that was... And then I said, but what shall I... I must become something. And she said, oh, become a lawyer. And I said, what is a lawyer? She says, oh, I'll give you an example. If our neighbour makes me angry and I kill him, then you come in and tell people that I didn't mean to. And I thought, that is great, because our neighbour was a little bit annoying. But fortunately... She either never got caught or she never got did kill someone, so that wasn't necessary. But hopefully that got me at the end, it got me from away from being a vet, and instead of law I studied psychology and rehabilitation. So I'm not sure quite what that says of me, but there you go. Maybe I thought lawyering is reading too much. Earlier speaker, the governor talked about advocacy being the long road, and most of us, or many of us, work in advocacy now. And I sometimes do wonder when I go to bed, what have I done? Or, have I made a difference? I remember at the age of 13, before we could choose not to do certain school subjects, so we still had to all do mathematics. And I know there's great mathematicians here, but it was certainly not my strength. And it was the last school class of the day. It was hot. The teacher talked to us, and he suddenly said, you know what? If I became a builder, by now I can look in front of me, and I can see, would have seen a wall, and I could be proud of having built this wall. Now I look in front of me, and I see blank faces. I see nothing. And I think often that's the case with advocacy. We feel, was that really worth it or not? And later on you find out that it was. So having come to New Zealand was a big step for me because, you know, you've got two gaps on your CV. One is to do with disability. One is to do with being an immigrant and not having work experience. So I think that in itself, and acknowledging other people who did immigrate, it is quite hard. And in the end, most of us probably, if you look at our ancestors, immigrated from somewhere anyway. I also often reflect that COVID helped a lot with leadership development with many of us. Nothing could ever have prepared us for a pandemic. We would read about the Black Plague and the Spanish flu and stuff, and we probably thought, oh, thank goodness it's not us. And then suddenly we had to deal with it. And to me, I was reminded of resilience and how many of people around me without an impairment or disability fell to pieces and had mental health issues. And I look at many fellow blind people who are like, well, we could usually not go to the shop, and we usually have to do online or, fun trying with social distancing. We have to have things in our home in case we run out and we can't just call upon someone to help us. And I want to say that sometimes that is the skills that we transfer, and maybe that is how leadership develops as well. World Blind Union Achievement. So first I want to acknowledge the two ex-presidents here in the room. We had David Blythe, who was president. He was a founding member in 1984 in Riyadh. And then from 1992 till 1996, he was president. And he's... Although he focused all round, of course, at the time, he did focus on war and conflicts leading to and causing disability. And we are actually back at that today, unfortunately. We also have in the room Marianne Diamond, who was president from 2008 to 2012. And apart from doing work in many areas, did a lot of spearheading in the area of Marrakesh Treaty development and signing off annexation. And I want to say to you, I've checked this morning, I'm on the WIPO Accessible Books Consortium board. And as of today, we have more than 1 million titles available in that can be transferred across nations. From that million, 400,000 people can get through what is called the new beneficiary agreement. So you don't have to go through your library. Your blindness library can give you a code to verify that you're a blind user. And you can go yourself with your Easy Reader app or whatever onto the Global Book Service and find books, find the titles. So yes, we can still go through our libraries, and many of us do, but I think ultimately we want the autonomy of going to look for titles ourselves. So that is how far, every time I wonder if I think I should have become a builder or not, then I think, no, look at that, how Marrakesh have come over the years. Our current achievements at WBU level, I just want to talk a bit about the last 4 years, because I think apart from surviving and having to support one another through COVID, we did do COVID research with the help of CBM. So we did release a report around how to support people in situations that can change. And of course, it never can cover everything, but it does talk about equitable health services, issues to do with social distancing if you can't see, etc. We've also got new educational resources that we developed with International Council on the Education of Blind People. So please, if you need to look at those, we've got three joint papers that you can either locate through WBU website or through the ICEVI website. Two of our brand newest resources is Accessibility Go and Closing the Accessibility Gap. Those are toolkits that you can use at local government level, central government level, whether you advocate at a hospital, at a school. It talks about how to accessibly design a service from the bottom up. So if you need, you can borrow parts from it, it's open source. Please look at that. Don't have to reinvent the wheel. Now I want to get to our General Assembly this year in September, the first week of September in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And I know for a fact that Helen Freres is currently, I want to acknowledge Helen, is on our Asia Pacific board, so she has to be there. Hopefully she better be there this year. I believe others are planning to attend, but I'll give you a bit of a preview so that hopefully we can get more of you attending. Our theme is a fragile world, unbreakable movement together towards inclusion. Because it is a fragile world with all the wars and natural disasters around us. But our movement has proven its sustainability so far, and together towards inclusion, very much fitting in with this convention's theme for this year. We will have online, the plenary sessions will be streamed online. The major four ones will be around Braille 200, around Marrakesh Progress, around supporting people in disaster-struck areas. And the last one that I'm going to facilitate, with hopefully the help of some of you, is asking the questions, why do we still need a global blindness movement? We've got to ask ourselves that yet, and hopefully we can answer some questions that in today's era of social media and Facebook groups and WhatsApp groups, why do we bother with getting together if we can just social media and like something or unlike something or, you know, things like that. So World Blind Union, for the first time, we've got a podcast. For the first time, we've got a YouTube channel. Now, ask Helen for the details if you haven't received it yet. I did say today, if I'm going to refer to anything, BCA And I think Vision Australia has got those notifications, but anybody can sign up and prescribe. That is what I do want to say. Instead of being top-down, we want to say anybody, whether you are an ally, a sighted person, a blind person, a member of this organisation, you can subscribe to our publications, to our social media. At our upcoming General Assembly, we'll cover old topics such as concurrent sessions around employment opportunities, around sport and recreation, but there will be brand new topics too, such as the use of AI, new health and eye research. And I talk about a new topic that just a week ago I attended in the middle of the night in New Zealand because it was done at the Conference of States Parties in New York, where disabled people get together to talk to governments about what we should do better. And the topic was disability inclusive trade. And how can we make sure that with a lot of things happening to do with tariffs and shipping, we actually put more emphasis on trade? Because there's so many of my colleagues that say to me, we've got equipment, new equipment, not just old equipment, new equipment to pass on, and we're happy to sponsor it, but we can't get it out of our country and we can't get it in other countries. And why I mentioned this session is there was actually a government representative from Australia's DFAT was there. So it was Australia and Finland who was the main government people who turned up and really tried to talk about how important this is. Getting a bit to the end now, and just wanting to acknowledge the support that Blind Citizens New Zealand is providing for me. As Marianne and others will attest, it's a lot. We can do more online now, and we do, but at times nothing beats getting together in person, and Blind Citizens New Zealand is doing that cost covering for me. In conclusion, I want to end with a quote in Maori, New Zealand's language of the land. There's a whakatauki, which is a proverb, and it's about our pairangi, our horizon. And again, I think this saying fits in with this conference theme. It is not the and it's because of COVID that I really struck onto this one, because I think COVID really forced us to think, I don't want to get stuck in my house. I want to talk to people again. So the English of the whakatauki goes, it's not the distance between us that's important, but our shared horizon. Thank you.
Thank you, Martine. On behalf of BCA, BCA members, our board, staff and guests, I'd like to express Cynthia thanks for you for addressing us and indeed joining us for BCA's 50th anniversary convention. As you say, nothing beats getting together sometimes, and we're privileged and honoured that you've chosen to get together with us. Thank you also for encouraging us to continue to explore the horizons between us and recognise that we're part of a global movement, and in fact it's not the distance, as you say, but it's what we share. So I believe we have a special gift for you. Thank you again for being with us, choosing to spend your weekend with us, and we're very grateful for your advocacy, which is very much seen, so please don't worry about that. Thank you.
Thanks, Helen, and thanks, Deb. And, of course, thanks, Martine. It's Vaughan Bennison speaking. Current President of Blind Citizens Australia, and I've been given this opportunity to speak to you just for a few moments ahead of our next segment. I want to talk about a couple of things. I want to, firstly, at this 50th anniversary convention, I wanted to briefly go over all of the people who've been President of Blind Citizens Australia since its inception. And I have to say that it's a big honour for me, because Blind Citizens Australia and I are pretty much the same age. There's actually a few months between us, so I wasn't born when BCA was first established, as someone pointed out to me last night. But I do want to go through the list of BCA presidents. The first one was David Blyth, and he's here with us today. Big congratulations, David. Following David, and I'm not going to give the years because I'm not entirely sure that they're all accurate, but we can do our best to try and make them accurate later. Following David was Bill Jolly. Then we had Joan Lederman. Then Bill Jolly once again. Following Bill was Michael Simpson, and he was president when I became involved with Blind Citizens Australia, so he was around for quite a while. Then Karen Knight took over from Michael, followed by Robert Altimore, and both Karen and Robert are here today. I didn't hear Michael. Is Michael here? No, Michael's not here. David Blyth followed once again. And then Cheryl Pasquale. I don't think Cheryl's in the room today. And then Greg Madsen served as president. Not sure who Emma Bennison is, but she followed Greg. Perhaps someone could inform me of who she is. And then Emma was followed by John Simpson, who you've been hearing from quite a lot today. Directly following John in 2021 was Fiona Woods, and it's great to see Fiona in the room with us today. Hi, Fiona. Following Fiona was Helen Ferris for a few months, and then I became president in 2024. I recognise the honour of being president of this organisation, and I particularly recognise it as I'm not actually Australian. I like to think that we all aim to do our best with BCA, the advocacy work that we do, the peer support and networking that we do, and the convention is a big part of that, and this one in particular. It's an opportunity for blind and vision impaired people to get together, to get to know one another, to talk about common issues, and to talk about where they encounter differences, what those differences are, and maybe some tips and tricks along the way to deal with those differences. No two people are alike. We're all very aware of that. And I encourage you to spend this weekend getting to know some new people. Maybe, as I said, you can provide some of those tips and tricks. You can certainly learn them. But I'd encourage you to get to know one another so that you can take home with you memories of this convention. And may this convention be as momentous as the first convention in 1975 was.
The next session needs a little introduction, I think, because it's hosted by Katrina Taylor, who's the chair of our National Women's Branch, but it has that fascinating title of NAB and Blab. So I'm not going to try and explain that, Katrina. I'm going to leave that to you. Make welcome Katrina Taylor.
Thank you for that, John, and I'm glad that I worked out how to turn this on. Right, NAB and Blab, it was a placeholder name and it's stuck. BCA, it's not just about the history of the organisation, but the history that each of us bring as members, the members that have gone before it. So across the weekend, we're going to hear from different members, some who were around in 1975, what was happening for them then, others, what do they think it'll be like at BCA's 100th anniversary, which I'm planning to be at, and I will declare I will be 104, but I don't care, I'm coming.
I'm not emceeing that one, Katrina.
Oh, so we can't ask you, John Simpson's not available, somebody take note, please. Fine. Okay, yeah. So today, I'm actually going to firstly throw to my colleague Ben Clare, because Ben is going to interview for us our Fijian participants who are joining us on Zoom. So I'll throw to Ben.
Okay. Doesn't seem to be...
Yeah, you're
yep.
on
is
there,
that working?
Ben. Yes,
oh,
Ben.
Oh, great, thank yep. you. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Katrina. Great to be here. This session really is reflective of looking back and looking forward, as we obviously the 50th anniversary is a great opportunity to reflect back. And if technology is behaving itself,
we're getting feedback from the Zoom system, ladies and gentlemen.
So hopefully, if technology is behaving itself, I'd love to introduce our special friends from across the Pacific in Fiji. The United Blind Persons of Fiji organisation is quite similar to BCA, have actually been around, I believe, for a similar amount of time, and they are the primary advocacy group for people who are blind in Fiji. So hopefully you can hear us. Can you hear us there, our UBP friends?
Have we got that line too?
If the mute is on, can we switch?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So if you can hear us, I'll just introduce and then I'll get you to speak. Hopefully that will work. So this lovely little Nab and Blab session really is going to focus on Fiji. So we're going to talk about what life was like for someone who was blind in Fiji primarily back, 50 years ago, but I'm assuming that a lot of our guests were not born at that time, but if they were, that'd be great. And also what a Fiji would look like in the future. What would we like to see for blind people and low vision people in Fiji? So hopefully, so I'm introducing United Blind Persons of Fiji, Rusi Senekula. Are you there, Rusi? This is when we always have a big laugh about technology, or a cringe, or a something about technology. But it's not sounding good. All right. We do have limited time, and I'm hoping our Fijian friends will be able to join us. We do.
Good morning there. Can you hear us?
Oh, we're sounding pretty good, hopefully. All right. So if you would like to introduce yourself and address the question around what life was like as a blind person for you growing up in Fiji, would you like to speak to that question? I understand there's two of you who would like to talk about that.
And we've got about 5 minutes.
Yeah, we've got about 5 minutes, so it's a quick one.
We have myself and Anyata here as well, and three other UBP members in our membership support officer. Maybe I give to our Madam President to begin the discussion this morning. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Okay.
Good morning.
And thank you, Claire, for the support of the invite to be part of this convention from Fiji, and we bring greetings and welcome to the this CA has been a friend to the United Blind Persons of Fiji way back in the 1990s. And I think that time I was fresh from high school, where I was just reiterating to Rudy that BCA was one of the first organization that supported UBP for 3 years funding, and that was during Mr. Bill Jolly's presidency. And we are so grateful that been invited to be part of the convention today. So fresh out of high school, seeing that we are part of this convention. Over the years, for me personally, that relationship has really built my confidence and empowerment to, in terms of my leadership and in the association. I also recognize the Halakhaos in the room, where they were the first to bring in Timai and the JAWS training into the organization. And we have a few other leaders, Merit Daniel, Matu Gable, and a few others that I haven't mentioned, and those who have gone, Rakesh, Angeline, Aquila, and a few others. So it has been a journey, but I would say that the relationship between BCA and United Blind Persons, I remember that it's in the 90s. We were always featured in the BCA newsletters, and we hope that this connection would be something in your connection to continue our relationship. And thank you again.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. That's the Madam President of United Blind Persons of Fiji. Lanyata Tuamapu, thank you very much for those remarks. Now, as we are starting to run out of time, because this is a short session, we would love for all of you, when as the discussions go throughout the day, please feel free, when things are open to online discussion, we would love to have your input and insights as to what's happening for people with vision impairment in Fiji, and also explore ways that BCA can further collaborate with your wonderful group, advocacy group in Fiji. So thank you, everyone. That was the first Nab and Blab, and the technology sort of held up. but it's really great to be able to bring our friends in from the Pacific, and we do also, you would have noticed early in the morning, earlier when we did our roll call, we have Mr. Ari Hazelman from the Samoa Blind Persons Association, who is also here in person, and we also look forward to his insights as we move through convention. So, great to be here. Thank you, our Pacific friends, for joining us. We look forward to hearing more from you. So, thank you. Back to you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much. Just take this opportunity to add an acknowledgement. I was very pleased to be part of our early work with our friends in Fiji that Bill Jolly so nobly led during the 1990s. And Ben, it's terrific to know of the work that you're doing, not only in Fiji, but right throughout the Pacific in terms of supportive services and development there. And Katrina, we'll hear from you a bit later in the day with another Nab and Blab.